This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Are you driving your car or doing laundry right now? Podcasts go best when they're bundled with another activity. Like Progressive home and auto policies, they're best when they're bundled too. Having these two policies together makes insurance easier and could help you save. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. Quote a home and car bundle today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary. Support for The New Yorker Critics at Large comes from Getty. Presenting Recurrent, a new podcast that uncovers why cultural heritage, from music to murals and petroglyphs to barbershops, is worth preserving. And what's at stake when we don't? Embark on a journey to explore cultural heritage through stories, expert interviews, and visits to sites where preservation efforts are in full swing. See what we can gain by keeping the past present. Tune in to Recurrent wherever you get your podcasts or learn more at getty.edu.
So I was thinking about my own relationship to watching sports. Like, I'm no Vincent Cunningham.
None of us are.
Well, Vincent is right now living and dying by the Knicks. And living, it should be said.
Living.
Because
yesterday, what a game.
We're
up 3-1 on the Philadelphia 76ers. I yelled my heart out in a bar in Brooklyn. We sang Frank Sinatra at the end of the game. It was a beautiful time.
You sang New York, New York?
I want to be a part of it. Hey! Welcome to Critics at Large, a podcast from The New Yorker. I'm Vincent Cunningham.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
And I'm Nomi Fry. Each week on this show, we make sense of what's happening in the culture right now and how we got here. Okay, you guys, I have a question for you.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to pick, sports movie or sex movie? Which do you choose?
I will not be boxed in. I find this question rude and offensive.
Oh my God.
Sports and sex can go together. What is this? What is this, you know, men are from Mars, women are from Venus kind of thing?
Right.
Since when are we in the business of creating such divisions? I ask for us to unite.
Why do we have to choose, you're saying?
Yeah. Is that just a cop-out, you think?
No.
Sex is a sport. Sports leads to sex. I mean, come on.
Oh, okay.
Sweat is the portal between these unifying.
Right. Yeah. It's the adhesive that forms the connection.
Uh-huh.
Between the sex movie and the sports movie. But in any case, this might be a moot question, my friends, because I have news for you. Mm-hmm. You might no longer have to choose because in theaters right now is a movie that is both of those things. It's called Challengers. It's directed by Luca Guadagnino. It stars the beautiful Zendaya. It's sexy.
How often does this happen? Going after the same girl?
Not as often as you think.
We usually have different types.
So you're saying I should be flattered?
Aren't you everybody's type?
And it's about tennis.
Tashi Duncan, she's in another league.
You were incredible today.
Come on! To have a fashion line, a foundation.
It's going to turn a whole family into millionaires.
Alex, I recall that before you watched Challengers and you had just watched the trailer, you went on a tear and said, this is not a sports movie.
Well,
I wondered if I had missed something when you went on. I mean, I was okay. Has she seen it already?
No. We can't, you know, I cannot be held to my pre-viewing assumptions. I'm going to answer this question very directly. It's a sports movie, guys.
100%. Okay, it's a sports movie.
I counted many tennis rackets,
yeah.
Balls simply thwacking about.
There were some loud thwacks.
Thwacking
to say
and
the
whacking,
least
coming
of
right
it.
At you.
Yeah.
You know, the sports movie is a story genre. You know, we have Raging Bull, we have A League of Their Own, we have too many to mention. And one thing that I was wondering when I was watching Challengers is where it belongs in the genre of the sports movie.
I can think of sports movies that have a lot to do with romance. I cannot think of a sports movie that has this much to do with sex.
Right.
This might be a first, at least in my sort of personal canon.
Right. So on this episode, we're talking about how new sports movies like Challengers and last year's The Iron Claw are upending some of the expectations in this genre of sports movie, specifically around gender roles and the sort of traditional depictions of masculinity that have dominated movies about the sports world. And, you know, we're going to talk about the sports movie genre as a whole, what it is, and why even those of us, like myself and Alex, I believe, who are not the most up-to-date with sports, can't resist a good movie about sports. Today on Critics at Large, the winning formula of the sports film. So let's start with kind of building blocks, right? What are some of the must-haves for you in a sports movie? Are there any crucial elements that you look for?
Well, for me, the most important thing is a central character.
Okay.
Who's deep, sort of everything that we look for in a protagonist, right? Deep interiority, you know, psychic intrigue, all of those things are channeled through, and this seems like it should be obvious, but it's not, an actual love of the game that they're supposed to be a professional at.
Okay.
So often, sports movies do not depict the actual game, and therefore, like, miss the potential for metaphor to be drawn between the mechanics of the game and the movements of the person's psyche. That is what I look for, a correspondence between thought and action.
Oh, I
so you're like
that.
So you're like,
I like
let's
that.
See the culmination of all of this. Let's see the game itself.
Which is the hardest thing because, you know what? You know, Teen Wolf, Michael J. Fox just didn't seem like he knew how to play basketball. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh,
so it's
yeah.
like that could be a bit of
so
a problem.
It's like actually watching the game play out, which means that the person has to have some technical ability.
Right.
You know, this goes to like Will Smith actually learning how to box in the LA movie. Like these things matter. So I want to see the action.
Okay.
And I want to see how the action mirrors thought.
That's so interesting because, you know, this could be taken to other movies as well. You know, like if you have like a pianist or if you have, you know, like it's the craft is needs to be depicted.
Yeah.
You say, Alex, what about you?
Will I say no to a training montage? Certainly not.
You
know,
get the
slabs of meat, get the ice packs, you know, drag some cinder blocks around by your heels, run up the steps of the museum in Philadelphia.
Like, sure.
And may I just say at this juncture, I want to foreground it. My first Rocky was Rocky IV, where he fights, you know, that USSR just Mega Man.
Drago is the most perfectly trained athlete ever. Whatever he hits, he'll be strong.
Yes.
It was playing on TV. I've rarely been so moved and stirred. I mean, I was ready to stand up and start chanting USA, USA.
I mean, this
I didn't
was
even
like...
realize there was like a string of other Rockies.
I feel like it was height of Reagan era.
Yeah.
Like height of Reagan era. It was like, we're going to kill those Russians.
Yeah. I mean, I, as a 12-year-old, you know, sitting in my living room, was transported immediately back to a time before my memory, just being there. And boy, was it a thrill. But that's just to say that that formula of the training montage works great. You know, what I want to see is I want to see someone get tested, come up against their idea of themselves and what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it's all about the test and the proof. Either you're proving to yourself that you're capable of something or you're proving to other people. And, you know, often those things are very much joined.
Yeah. No, totally. I think what kind of unites the two things that you guys said to me is pain. You know, like you want to see the pain.
Yeah.
Because the payoff is like, what is that like Marines tagline? Like, pain is weakness leaving the body or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like
is that,
totally.
Is that the Marines?
I feel like I saw it in an ad for
Marines. I'm sure they've just taken that.
Yeah.
Wow. See, the first thought that flashed in my mind when you said that was the image of a ballet dancer's like disfigured foot.
I literally just Googled Black Swan, the 2010 movie, which is all about like, the only thing I think about is Natalie Portman's fucked up feet in that movie.
Like, so and I love Black Swan.
For
it's
me,
a rare Aronofsky movie that I love, partly because of this. So these are some of our favorite things about sports movies. With this in mind, let's turn to Challengers, the new movie directed by Luca Guadagnino, the Italian director who also made Call Me By Your Name, notably, as well as several other movies. What did you guys think of the movie? First impressions, did you like it? I mean, I already kind of know Vincent's answer.
I beyond liked it. I felt it in my body and still feel it.
Oh, my God.
I love Challengers. I think it is a very good movie.
Okay.
So it sails past your test for a real depiction of the sport itself.
Well, the real depiction, I mean, it's some of the, I think it's some of the best, like, movie tennis I've seen. And I'm not a tennis player, but they seemed, each of the actors seemed to have taken the brief very seriously.
Yes.
You know, when
I will agree with that.
There's a point where the two guys are sitting up in the stands talking about Zendaya's characters. They're like, look at that backhand. And I was like, yeah, look at it. It's pretty good. But weirdly, this is why it kind of set up this expectation that I love so much about, like, tennis, like, sports going up against psychological realism.
Yes.
What's amazing about this is that it totally turns that on its head. Because it's
not
at all psychologically realistic at all. You've never met anybody like these people. It's more like a parable.
I completely agree with this. And it's something that, for me, that bothered me.
Uh-huh.
Before we continue, and I want to hear what you think too, Alex, perhaps...
And I want to tell you.
Would you do us the honor of giving us a quick synopsis of this movie?
Oh, would I ever?
Before we continue. Yeah.
So this movie is about a love triangle and a tennis triangle. The players are Patrick Zweig, played by Josh O'Connor, and Art Donaldson, played by Mike Feist, who were friends growing up at a tennis academy, but have been torn apart by their attraction to and, in some cases, love for Tashi, played by Zendaya, Tashi Duncan.
I should go. My dad comes looking for me. I'll see you at school, Art.
Wait, are you on Facebook?
What?
He's asking for your number. And so am I.
You both want my number?
Very much so, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not a homewrecker.
We don't live together.
It's an open relationship.
Also, Patrick has a girlfriend.
I do not. Hey, come hang out with us later. They put you up at the hotel in Flushing, right? We're in room 206.
Want me to come tuck you in?
No. You just keep talking. About tennis?
Who was herself a tennis star and en route to being a major champion and player in the sport when she was taken out by an injury. And so as a result, she has become a tennis coach. She is married to Art, but she has been involved with Patrick in the past. In the present moment of the movie, set in 2019, Tashi is married to Art. She's his coach. He's had a lot of success as a professional tennis player. He's won various Opens, but he's, you know, been kind of off his game lately, and she wants to really pump him up and get him back into the swing of things. So she enters him into this Challengers tournament, a kind of lower-level qualifier sort of tennis tournament, in which he plays his old friend and now nemesis, Patrick. And not only are they going to meet face-to-face on the court and have it out, but there's all kinds of intrigue happening behind the scenes, tons of sexual stuff going on. And also, even Patrick gets Tashi alone and asks her if she would consider doing the unthinkable, coaching him.
I want you to be my coach.
What?
Even if he wins the Open, complete his career Grand Slam, Art's still going to retire as someone who's just really, really good.
That's what you guys will have done together.
But imagine if you could turn Patrick Zweig into a guy who wins a slam. You still have a season. You still have one good season, and I need you to bring it out of me. So, what do you think?
How fucking dare you?
Jesus Christ!
You want my best piece of advice for you? You want me to coach you? Okay, quit.
You know, who are her loyalties to? Will she be tempted by the other one? How do these guys reckon their professional playing ambition with their feelings, their romantic and sexual feelings about this mysterious woman?
Mm-hmm.
And such we have it. We have a conflict between three people and a game meant for two.
How did you feel? We know how Vincent felt. Vincent felt passionately and deeply.
And okay. Still does. Thank you.
And still does.
Okay. How do I feel? Well, I think this is a very, very entertaining movie, and I would recommend anyone to see it. It will, like, definitely entertain the hell out of you.
Yeah.
Here's what I wasn't into about the movie.
Okay.
I wasn't into the fact that Zendaya's character is not a person. I wasn't into that. I wasn't into the fact that her entire role is to basically be the, like, line coach for these two guys. Like, the fact that her game is ruined really early on and that she then just becomes this kind of appendage for the careers and ambitions of these two other guys, and her entire motivations for the second half of the movie are just based around her own inability to, like, let the game go because Art, her husband, pretty clearly wants to retire and is sort of done, and she needs to keep, like, goading him on.
Yeah.
On the one hand, I thought it was interesting to see a woman in the role of basically, like, male, like, toxic male whipper-upper. Like, mm-hmm. You can't stop. You'll be less of a man if you don't win. Like, yeah. I got to see you win, all of that.
But that's a classic also henpecking thing.
It's a classic henpecking thing. And so you're right. But I just didn't like dangling the possibility of an interesting female athlete and then completely taking her out of the game. The screenwriter, Justin Kretzkis, mm-hmm. This is his first movie, and he has said he was inspired by watching the famous match, which I watched in real time, and probably you guys did too, between Naomi Osaka and Serena Williams at mm-hmm. the 2018 U.S. Open.
Which I watched it in real time.
Yeah, for anyone who saw that, is an unforgettable match and brought so many issues of—
an incredible psychodrama.
A psychodrama, just emotion, competition, what it means to be a newcomer, what it means to be the reigning champ who has to at some point figure out when to hand it in, what it is to have a relationship with the public and the challenges that a career like that poses, of public perception, of race, which is something that I think this movie, like, winks at and does nothing with. And, like,
absolutely nothing.
I'd almost rather have had it do absolutely nothing than,
totally.
Like, there's that line that everyone is talking about, you know, oh, look, I'm taking such good care of my two little white boys.
Yeah.
I thought that was super cheap. Like, either kind of address what it means to be a black woman in this sport or don't, but, like, to kind of wink at. Anyway, I found it pretty lame. And also motherhood, like, your body changes and what to do with, you know, of course, it's not an issue if you're not competing, as this character is not. But we need a movie that's going to talk to some of these, like, actual real issues now. And none of that was in this movie. And, oh, man, I'd like that movie to be made.
This was not.
Yeah.
This is not that.
So just, to piggyback, Alex, on this question of, like, okay, you're comparing it to, like, a real-life sports match and, mm-hmm. you know, the dramas they're in that didn't find their way into this movie. As a sports movie, qua sports movie, was this satisfying to you, kind of vis-a-vis the genre of, mm-hmm. of sports movies?
To me, in this way, it is, like, mm-hmm. on some level— fundamentally a sports movie, and mm-hmm. what it does amazingly is tie the logic of the sport that it is mm-hmm. portraying, tennis, mm-hmm. to the logic literally of screenwriting. It gives us these captions of first set, second set, third set, in the same way we have three acts in a screenplay, and it portrays the relationship between these guys and the rivalry between them on the court and off the court
mm-hmm.
as a three act structure.
Yeah.
Their kids,
mm-hmm.
when they first acknowledge that they both want the same person.
Mm-hmm.
The middle, when they sort of their fates start to diverge.
Mm-hmm.
And also their sort of, as you mentioned, Patrick Zweig is with Zendaya at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
In the sort of middle of their relationship is when Art marries her. And at the end is, like, the lead up to this match that's been happening the whole duration of the movie. So, like, it tethers the storytelling to the logic of a tennis game. The whole movie is a tennis match. And then, you know, just visually, it takes the sport very seriously. It begins with with everybody watching the match between Art and Patrick, the sort mm-hmm. of challengers match. And you get the funny thing of, like, watching the heads go back and forth in the way that you do in tennis.
Yes.
Like,
mm-hmm.
and this is, like, a running joke throughout the movie, like, that, you know, reiterates itself even in the other parts of the movie. So there's a big argument between Tashi and Patrick in a dorm room at Stanford,
mm-hmm.
you know? It's the big breakup between them, basically. And the camera is going whizzing back and forth between her, him, her, mm-hmm. him, in the same way that a tennis match mm-hmm. is filmed on television. So it takes all of the visual conventions of the sport, not just the mechanics of the sport, super seriously and makes it part of the form of the movie.
It's a formal conceit.
Which is like
it's
a formal not conceit. Often done. Like
it's
a lot of people don't make the correspondence between how a sport is filmed and how a movie might be filmed, how a sport lays itself out as a story and how a movie does that. And I think Guadagnino takes that very seriously, and it becomes the whole visual logic of the film in a way that is very satisfying and makes it like fundamentally a sports movie in every particular.
Yeah, content-wise as informally.
Thumbs up, yes, sports movie, 100%.
In a minute, our favorite sports movies. Vincent and Alex, can you give us a hint about yours? Some teasers.
Mine features the great Denzel Washington with a pretty ridiculous mini afro.
Okay.
I don't know if this is my favorite of all time, but I will just ask, you know, what would happen if Jamaica were to have a bobsled team?
I see pride.
Stick
I
around.
I see power.
Amazing.
Hi, I'm Deborah Treisman, fiction editor of The New Yorker and host of the New Yorker Fiction Podcast. On the podcast, I ask a great contemporary writer to select a favorite story from the magazine's almost 100-year archive to read and discuss. Together, we delve into the story, exploring its themes, its style, and what makes fiction work. You can listen to authors like Otessa Moshfegh talk about why we write.
Story, or attaching a story or creating a story, is this inclination that we all have to stop spinning.
And you can hear writers like George Saunders discuss the nature of storytelling.
On the first read, you accept these things as descriptions and they make you see the scene, but every line is a chance to inflect the reader's mind.
You'll discover new favorite authors and read old favorites in new ways. Episodes of the New Yorker Fiction Podcast are released on the first of every month. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on credit worthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
Okay, so, you guys. Challengers and the sports movie. Okay? So many great entries in that genre. Let's get a Hall of Fame together, okay? Our personal Hall of Fame. What do you guys think is your entry if we were to assemble a Hall of Fame?
I'm going to throw A League of Their Own in there. Let's just throw it right in.
Okay.
It's good.
Let's do it.
It's good. It's a great movie, baseball movie about a group of women who were recruited for a women's baseball league during World War II and all the men are at war. You know, Madonna, Gina Davis, Rosie O'Donnell, Tom Hanks.
At the end of practice today, you all have to get fitted for your uniforms. And this is what they're going to look like.
Pretty darn nifty, if you ask me. How about that, Billy?
You can't slide in that.
I like it.
Hey, that's a dress.
It's half a dress.
Excuse me, that's not a baseball uniform.
Yeah, what do you think we are, ball players or ballerinas?
You know, to be the, I guess you can divide sports moves in a lot of different ways, but of course you have ones that are about the individual and ones that are about the formation of a team. That's a formation of a team.
Yeah.
Another classic formation of a team, Cool Runnings.
Cool Runnings.
You know, Jamaican bobsled. Enough said.
Yeah.
Dear God, just let it be better than yesterday.
Ready.
Ready.
Feel the rhythm. Feel the rhyme. Get on up. It's bobsled time. Cool Runnings.
I probably saw that
I've
movie.
I've never seen that.
I probably saw that movie, I would say, between 80 and 90 times in, you know, the third to sixth grades.
When we were kids, it was like a public utility. It was like coming out of the faucet.
That's
it was
right.
just like,
that's
it was
right.
water, yeah.
That's right. And honestly, that's great. Like, it should
Absolutely.
Have been. All right. So what are some others?
Yeah. So
Help
what are
me
some,
out, guys.
Okay. So I'm gonna answer my own question. I'm going to start with Marty Scorsese's 1980 masterpiece, Raging Bull, which it's up on the Criterion channel now. I rewatched it like a month ago. You know, it tells the story of the early 50s middleweight boxing champion, Jake LaMotta, who played by De Niro, of course, Robert De Niro, who is an absolute animal. Goes with being an animal, but resists being taken for an animal.
Go ahead.
You want me to hit you?
I want you to hit me with everything you got. I want you to fucking lay me out. Go ahead.
You sure?
Yeah. All right. Harder.
Yeah?
You throw a punch so I can take it up the ass. Come on. Harder. Harder. Harder.
That's hard. What the fuck? What do you
take
want?
It take it off.
Ah, oh, come on. You want to stop now? Take That's enough.
Come on.
All right.
Come on.
Fuck around, man. Come on.
Good. Right. I'm going to smack you again. Throw it again.
That's enough. That's enough.
Harder.
Nah, your fucking cuts are opening and everything. What are you trying to prove? What does it prove?
It's a movie about American masculinity, basically. And it's about the suffering of the body as a spectacle, I guess. Or at least it's partly about that. And I think it's a great sports movie. Vincent, what about you?
So the one that I teased with Denzel Washington and the Afro is the movie He Got Game, 1998, produced and directed by Spike Lee. Mm. And it tells a story of two men, one young, one old, a father and a son. Mm. Jesus Shuttlesworth, played by Ray Allen, is like this amazing basketball player who's being recruited by many college programs. And his father, Jake, has been in jail in Attica. And the governor of the state, where one of the schools is, that wants Jesus Shuttlesworth, offers—
What a great name.
Yeah, it's amazing. He's offered, like, here's a ticket out of jail if you can get your son to go to this school.
Right.
And so he's out all of a sudden. Horrible relationship, obviously, between father and son. At the beginning, they won't even talk to one another. And the story of their relationship plays out through this story of recruitment.
I want you to go to big state, son. That's the real reason why I'm out here. That's the reason they let me out. You find it in your heart to go to big state, and they may let me out on early parole.
So that's what this is all about, huh?
That's a part of it. That's
Jake, you just like everybody else.
I'm like everybody else. I ain't like everybody else. Everybody else ain't your father. Everybody else ain't bring you in this world. Everybody else don't care about you, son.
There are amazing scenes of basketball. Of course, Ray Allen is a basketball player, so the basketball is pretty good. And he and Denzel sort of playing one-on-one, sort of symbolizing this psychodrama between this like Oedipal struggle
right,
between
right,
father
right.
and son.
Right, classic situation.
Incredible movie. I love it. My second, one of my favorite movies of all time, also one of my favorite romantic comedies, is Love and Basketball.
Mm. Oh, okay.
Omar Epps, Sanaa Lathan, childhood friends, turned lovers.
At the height of their attractiveness.
Both of them are throwing, speaking another sports metaphor, throwing 100-mile-per-hour pitches of beauty the whole movie, right?
Yes.
Sanaa Lathan, I don't know, what can I say? Sanaa, if you're listening, I still love you. What can I say about Sanaa? Anyway, this is another movie that sort of subsumes the logic of its sport into its storytelling because it presents itself in four quarters. And it shows how like
right.
a love story that stretches across a lifetime has different moments, different movements. You know, iconically, there is a moment where Sanaa Lathan is like, one game for your heart.
You still think the sun rises and sets on your ass? Guess what? It doesn't.
Then why are you so upset?
Because you don't pull this shit on someone who's about to get married.
Better late than never. Right?
Wrong.
I'll play you.
What?
One game, one-on-one.
For what?
Your heart.
You're out of your mind.
So what, you gonna bitch up?
And Omar Epps whoops her ass in the game and still was like, I still love, you know.
Yeah.
So it's just a great movie that takes seriously. You can tell that it comes from a love of the sport.
I mean, I wonder, just hearing you speak about it, Vincent, you know, and you were saying this about Challengers as well, the idea of kind of sports as a metaphor for life, mm-hmm. or as a metaphor for something broader that makes its use on screen kind of like significant and important, even for people who aren't necessarily like, I mean, you happen to be a basketball person, you know, basketball guy. But what is it about it, do you think, about sports that make for such a fecund metaphor?
It's, well, first of all, winning and losing. I mean, that's as good a metaphor as you're going to find for anything. You know, are you going to triumph or are you going to fail?
It's the game of life.
That's right. But I really think it also has to do with the personal test and the quest, therefore.
Yes.
I think a great sports movie takes this idea of you coming up against yourself and you needing to prove something to yourself, to change your own self-conception by how you perform. Raging Bull is a great example of that, I think in large part because it's not a happy movie. It's not a movie.
At all.
No, it's not a movie about triumph and, you know, conquering the will. It's a movie about, like, can you unleash this enormous power, but can you control it also? And
at what cost?
Yeah, and at what cost?
Do you think that there are certain sports that lend themselves more readily to the genre of sports movies, to depiction on screen?
I think the answer is no, because each sport has its own form of sort of psychological rhythm that can be explored through mm-hmm. storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it is interesting to see how, especially in America, which sport is predominant, which sport means the most to us, corresponds to sort of what gets depicted. For a while, like mid-century, the prize fight became the, you know, Norman Mailer, Ball, everybody, all the great writers wrote about boxing mm-hmm. ad nauseum.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see, like, there were Raging Bull, like, as you mentioned. So now it's interesting to see, like, kind of a thousand flowers bloom, and it's interesting to see, like, something like Challengers 40 years ago might have been a boxing movie. So the one-on-one, the intensity, the physicality. Patrick Zweig, there's a moment when we first start to actually meet him, and he's like, we see him eating, and you can see how ravaged his hands are. This mm-hmm. goes to your point about pain.
Yeah.
You can see how mm-hmm. messed up his hands are
mm-hmm.
by so much contact with the racket or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
All of that probably would have been pasted upon boxing, a couple decades ago.
Now,
it's like
two middleweight boxers and the woman they love.
Yeah.
or something. Yeah, I mean, I do think, to Alex's point about winning and losing and how, you know, kind of that's like the organizing metaphor. I mean, it's not a metaphor, it's literal, but, like, you know, it's like the game of sports, whatever it is, and the game of life. I think Challengers, that's kind of all Challengers is about. Because Tashi, the Zendaya character, she's so attached to winning herself. And when that is taken from her with her injury, she kind of transfers that on to the men.
Tell me it doesn't matter. Tell me it doesn't matter if I win tomorrow.
No. You tell me if it matters. You're the professional competitor, Art. It can't be about avoiding my judgment. I'm not a nun. I'm not your mommy.
I'm just asking that you love me no matter what.
What am I, Jesus?
Yeah.
You can beat him.
What if I don't? How are you going to look at me if I still can't beat Patrick Zweig?
Just like this.
She literally determines who will be her sexual partner by according to which one of those men will be the winner. And she's the prize, right? And that continues on over the course of these characters' lives after these people get married and have a child, and, you know, and it's such to me, and the movie doesn't seem to me at least, doesn't seem to critique that. It seems to enjoy it and to sort of champion it, which made the movie like an extremely, I mean, as I said, enjoyable, but a completely kind of like Reagan era, weirdly throwback, like kind of barren experience, you know, of like, here's this woman with like her perfect body with these two like doofuses also with great bodies, and they're gonna kind of like stumble in front of her, and she's gonna walk around with the, like her Cartier watch and like her thong looking incredible, and she's gonna be like, I don't care about you as people, I'm just gonna choose you based on like who's literally winning the game. And that's where it linked up to me, mm-hmm. Vincent, with the complete lack of psychological acuity and mm-hmm. interiority. Because again, yeah, I mean, it's a formula. It's a form. It's who wins. In a minute, we'll talk about another recent film that presents a totally different treatment of gender roles in the sports world. The Iron Claw.
Oh, my Lord. This movie is devastating.
It's pretty fucked
up,
huh?
I'm reeling.
She's still reeling, folks.
I'm reeling.
That's in a minute on Critics at Large.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
So, guys, it's time to talk about another recent movie that kind of plays or upends some of our long-held expectations around the sports movie. I'm talking about The Iron Claw.
Oh, yeah.
Written and directed by Sean Durkin, came out in December 2023. What a Christmas movie. And a happy New Year to us all.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Alex, you are in shock.
I'm in shock. Okay. I saw this movie 3 or 4 days ago, and I'm absolutely, you know, I haven't recovered.
Right. Okay, so I'm just going to say a few words about what this movie is about for those listeners who haven't had a chance to see
Please
it.
Please do.
This movie recounts...
Although, if you want to be like me and go in with zero knowledge of what this is and just be knocked flat on your ass, you know, by all means... Fast forward for 5 seconds.
Right. So I think what Alex knew is that this is a movie about early 80s wrestlers with funny haircuts.
That's all I knew. That's it.
Yeah. So just to get a tiny bit more granular, this is a movie that recounts the tragic saga of the Von Erich family.
Keyword tragic.
Keyword tragic. The Von Erich family, the father Fritz, is a wrestler, kind of has always dreamed of being world champion, doesn't pan out for him, he's embittered about it, and decides to raise his children, all sons, and kind of pits them against each other, trains them hard to become wrestlers. It's kind of focalized from the point of view of Kevin Von Erich, played by an incredibly bulked up Zac Efron, very far from his High School Musical days.
Ever since I was a child, people said my family was cursed. We never talked about it. And I don't know if my brothers and I believed it back then, but bad things kept happening. Mom tried to protect us with God. Pop tried to protect us with wrestling. He said if we were the toughest, the strongest, the most successful, Nothing could ever hurt us. I believed it. We all did. He loved our father. And we loved wrestling.
His brothers, one by one, die, each in a more kind of like tragic way, until he's the only one left standing in this family of doomed wrestlers.
Yeah. In real life, there's another Von Erich brother who also died, and they
couldn't even accommodate him.
They didn't even put it into the movie. It's like, it's too much.
Chris Von Erich.
They
couldn't accommodate him. I loved the Iron Claw. Like, I really didn't have expectations one way or the other for it. And the tragedy then began, but, you know, I didn't let up. You know, what's very interesting about the Iron Claw, I think, first of all, from a sports movie perspective, are two things. One thing, and the movie deals with this directly, is just wrestling. Very confusing as a sport. You know, wrestling.
Really confusing.
Wrestling clearly has something to do with physical capacity and is super physical, but it also is a scripted game kind of situation.
Right.
There are scenarios, there are characters people play. Mm-hmm. And here it's something more nebulous and weird because it's open to external manipulation and it's open to the machinations of their father. You know, which brother is he going to help out? Which brother is he going to try to put before the others? So there's that. And the second way in which it totally upends sports movies' expectations is that there really isn't triumph. There isn't the possibility for triumph.
Close, yeah.
It's not even close. Like, the highlights are very quickly followed by tragedy, as you say, Nomi.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are also completely enmeshed and intertwined because the it really shows this dark side of needing to prove that you are, to, you know, briefly paraphrase Marlon Brando in On the Waterfront,
a contender. Yeah,
that you are a contender, that you could have been a contender. You know, I actually think this film in Challengers have a lot to say to one another because they're both interested in looking at masculinity in sports and the cost of masculinity in sports.
Mm-hmm.
And Challengers and Luca Guadagnino, he's interested in, you know, sexing it up and playing with it and putting in a ton of homoerotic subtext to kind of have fun with it and to, you know,
right.
be, I think.
Or well, text rather than
or
subtext.
Or text rather than subtext.
Subtext is right.
Yeah, to, you know, be a little subversive in that way.
Mm.
But for me, the equivalent character to Fritz Von Erich in Challengers is Zendaya.
Yeah,
she
it's Tashi. Yeah, for
it's
sure.
It's Tashi.
She is the Iron Claw.
She's the Iron Claw. She's the taskmaster.
Much like Fritz Von Erich.
Well, she's the one who's setting expectations and also making it very clear that her judgment of these guys as men, not just as athletes, but as, you know, men worth their salt, totally depends on their performance and on their wins and their losses. I do think there's something different about the way that both of these movies are going right at this idea of, dare we say it, toxic masculinity, which of course is a cliche and a trope in our time. But the looking at it seemed to signal at least a shift about what the sports movie is or can do. You know, you
right.
could, if you want to compare it to something like Raging Bull, that's all there in Raging Bull as well. It's not like it's not. It was something about the—
And beautifully so.
Yeah, of course. You know, which is also a movie about abusing women and neglecting your children and abusing yourself fundamentally.
Yeah.
So it's not like that's not been there, but it is in these two movies in a much more, let's just say, zeitgeisty kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. What do you think, Vincent? Like, do you think the way gender and masculinity gets treated in both Challengers and the Iron Claw, does it signal for you like a shift in the sports movie, the way it treats these things?
Yeah, it's funny because much earlier in this conversation, we talked about League of Their Own and how much that movie was able to crucially using women, foreground some of the, like, I don't know, like the sort of, you could call it love or like homosociality that is required in like team situations in sports or whatever.
Yeah.
Both of these movies, Challengers and The Iron Claw, do that too. The love between brothers, the sort of, as it turns out, like lifelong erotics of love and competition between two competitors who are also lifelong friends, you know. What what sports and its like brutality, its like zero sum nature does to friendship.
Yeah.
And I think bringing that into the situation, as mentioned, of sort of like the problematic aspects of masculinity in our time, I do think that is – there's something, if not new, very contemporary about both of them. They're very much products of our time in a way that is exciting and makes me wonder, to Alex's earlier point, like what this kind of gaze will look like when it actually – swivels back toward women, when it swivels back toward other aspects of our society. I think it's an exciting possibility.
Right. I mean, I would like to mention there was a TV adaptation made by Abby Jacobson that had one season on Amazon of A League of Their Own, and all the sort of like female homosociality of the movie moved from a kind of like, you know, queer subtext into text.
So I've been thinking.
Okay.
I have no idea what that was like with Dana, but maybe I could take you to dinner sometime. But it would just look like two friends eating, right? It wouldn't look like anything else.
I wish I could.
We just have 9 games left. And this is gonna end. I just want it to be as real as we can make it until then.
Well, I guess you gotta figure out how to get us into the championships then, right, Coach? I'll leave you with your little game.
This, in a way, can also be kind of like taken as one of these texts, like Challengers and the Iron Claw, that kind of pivots towards a kind of like brighter, bolder articulation of like gender in sports.
Yeah.
You know, and sexuality in sports.
Yeah.
What would you like to see from a sports movie next in like your dream scenario?
I mean, I've said it, but I'm just going to say it again. Like, I think there are so many interesting things about women in sports. I mean, it sounds incredibly like, let me push my glasses up my nose and like once again advocate for women in sports. But like, yeah, but I'd like to see that. And I'd like to see someone take that seriously. I think tennis would be a great place to look at that and take that seriously about what it means to be a female competitor, what, you know, dealing with changing body, dealing with body image in the public, you know, expectations around your behavior, all of these things. That's a wide open field.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, you know, I what I want from sports movies, and I think it's always been there, but I'm excited by Challengers because it also just is so straightforwardly an exercise in style.
Yes.
Because, you know.
It's nothing if not that.
It is that.
Style and up the wazoo.
And it's weird. Like, I think there's a middle generation of filmmakers. Like, Tarantino never did a sports movie. Paul Thomas Anderson never did a sports movie. Mm. Wes never did a sports movie. I think that there are some missed opportunities for like our most stylish filmmakers. I would just like lay down the gauntlet. Like, if you want to express to us
That's
your
nice.
Personal vision,
That's
it's
nice.
Like, do a sports movie. Because we'll know what you care about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Visually, sensually.
Yeah.
We will know.
This has been Critics at Large. Our senior producer is Rhiannon Corby, and Alex Barish is our consulting editor. Our executive producer is Stephen Valentino. Condé Nast's head of global audio is Chris Bannon. Alexis Quadrado composed our theme music, and we had engineering help today from Jake Loomis, with mixing by Mike Cushman. You can find every episode of Critics at Large at newyorker.com/critics, and you can email us at themail@newyorker.com with the subject line Critics. See you next Thursday.
The Run Through with Vogue is where you'll meet all the most exciting people in fashion and culture.
I am Fran Lebowitz, who should be the mayor of New York.
We all support that. We support that.
Very nice.
Nikki.
Yes.
It's been really great being in this beautiful pink room.
All right, Usher, can you hear us?
I can hear you.
All right.
Can you hear me?
We can.
We can.
All right, here we are.
On the podcast, you'll learn how Vogue really works.
Sometimes we'll come in for a second or even third run through until we are AWOK.
Can you tell us what AWOK means?
It means AWOK, Anna Wintour OK.
I'm Cho Minardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel.
And we're the hosts of The Run Through with Vogue, where fashion and culture collide.
Join us. It's AWOK.
Listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.